question at the end of the tradition to continue our focus on group conscience.
There we go.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Melissa R. And I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Melissa.
Tradition 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Does our group encourage everyone to take an active part in meetings and group conscious decisions? Before voting on group conscience decisions, does the group take the time to find out as much as it can about the matter and discuss it fully? Do we listen with open minds to everyone's point of view? Do we ever put pressure on the group to accept the ideas of certain individuals simply because they have been in OA a long time? Do we feel like we have to save face in group discussions? Or can we all go along in good spirit with the group conscience, even if we differed with it in the beginning? Do we criticize service officers, OA committees, and office workers, or do we support their efforts? Do we hold our service officers accountable? Does the group give full attention to the group secretary, intergroup representative, and others making announcements? Do our group members volunteer or willingly accept group offices, such as secretary and treasurer? Or does our group have trouble finding members willing to do service? Do we all offer to help set up, clean up, or do other chores? Do we all, even those who are all relatively new in OA, and even those who have been around a long time, do what we can?
And it is with great pleasure that I introduce our second speaker, Rosalie B., who will share her experience, strength, and hope for 30 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for your service. Okay. I'm Rosalie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Rosalie.
And I'm going to speak from notes. So let me qualify first. I've been coming to OA since sometime in mid-1977. And I can't remember my birth date, so my sponsor said, pick one. Just pick one. Put it on the calendar. And so I remember it was really hot, and I remember the leaves were starting to turn, so I picked September 15th. And that's my OA birthday, and I've been coming back ever since September 15th, 1977. And have perfectly imperfect abstinence since then. And so we talk about what it was like and what happened and what it's like now. So I'm just going to briefly qualify. I thought I could lose the weight by myself. I thought I didn't need somebody else to tell me how to go on a diet, what to eat. I had a lot of nutritional planning already. Is that okay? Here we go. I knew how to plan meals. I knew how to cook. That was good, too. I knew how to cook. I knew how to cook the good stuff, and I knew how to cook the bad stuff, the stuff that is not on my food plan anymore. And so I felt like I had a lot of experience with food, and I didn't need somebody else to tell me what to do with it. But by the time I got to OA, I had run out of options. I was eating tuna fish cans, pulling tuna fish cans from the pantry, while on the door of the pantry were all the diets I had tried. They were pasted to the door, and I was eating tuna fish. I was way past the sugar and way past the cake, cookies, candy, all that stuff. Now I was eating stuff that I didn't really like garbanzo beans and tuna. That's the point at which I realized I don't have control over my eating anymore, and I need help with it. And so I made that phone call to OA. Somebody had told me about it a long time ago, and I didn't need it then because I was thin, you know, and I thought OA was all about being thin. And I didn't need it, but I stuck it away in the back of my head. And I know when I look back on that higher power was already working in my life long before I got to the program. And I'm so grateful for that, because by the time I got there and sat in the chair, I remember I was riding my bike at that time, and sat down in the chair, and all I saw around me were these smiling faces. And they were mostly older women. And I didn't know any of them. They didn't know me, but they welcomed me with open arms. And they were so glad to see somebody that was younger than them. I think that was really why they were smiling. But there was recovery in the room. people were talking about food plans at that time. People were talking about working the steps. They mentioned the Big Book. But I didn't remember any of that from when I first came in. It's a blank. All I remember is I kept that smile on my face, and they smiled back at me. And that's what kept me coming back. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps right away. I started doing service right away. At that time, we were smoking in the rooms. Some people were smoking in the rooms. And I was cleaning out ashtrays of people who were smoking in the rooms, and coffee cups, too. But my sponsor got me right into service right away, and that's been a theme in my recovery. And gradually, as I worked my way through the steps, the weight started to come off. I think by the time I had gotten through my first year of recovery, almost all the weight had come off. And I haven't gained it back. And that in itself is a huge miracle in my recovery. So, what it's like now is that I've learned through those early days of being in this program that I need to be here, first of all. That it's not about being thin. It's about carrying the message of recovery to those who still suffer. That's my primary purpose today. And it still works. You know, those 12 steps, they still work for me. Darn it. You know, as long as I keep working them, they still deliver. And so I keep coming back. And I've never stopped coming back. I've never felt like this isn't working for me anymore. I've never felt like, oh, I want to drop out. I'm tired of going to meetings. I've never felt that way. I feel like that's been a gift in my recovery, too, because I see so many people that have come through the doors and gone back and come, you know, in and out and in and out, and the swinging door goes both ways. Sometimes I see them come back and sometimes I don't. So I'm very grateful that I've been given that gift of persistence, the willingness to stay here. So that's my story. It's not spectacular. I've heard it in other meetings. I've heard other people talk their stories and tell me how they got here and what works and what doesn't for them. And I just think of myself as a garden variety compulsive overeater. I'm no different than anybody else that sits in these rooms. And that's kind of how my life is. I am a garden variety person who tries to live life on life's terms today. And I keep working those steps. Because I tell you, when you're working the traditions, you need those steps in your life. So I'm going to read tradition 2 again. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. So one of the things that happens when you're asked to be a speaker is that you actually have to, me, I have to go back and do my homework. So when I was thinking about what I wanted to say today, I'm thinking, so how do I work this tradition in my own life first? How does it apply to me? What do those words mean to me? They're words on a piece of paper, but, you know, I mean, how does that work for me? So for me, when the words say our group purpose, it means I belong to a group. I'm part of the group now. I'm not sitting in my home with the telephone off. I actually belong to a group of people that want me to be here and that I have reserved my seat in the rooms of OA. I have done my homework with compulsive overeating, and I got here through the miracle of my higher power working in my life. So for me, that's a really important concept. And the only reason I'm here is to carry the message to those who still suffer. That's our primary purpose in OA, and that's why I'm here. So when I keep that primary purpose in mind, I'm going to be okay. When it speaks of one ultimate authority, for me that means that the OA has a higher power. My group has a higher power. Every group I go to has a higher power, just like I have a higher power. It's that someone or something who makes the final decision for the group. And for me, that someone is not me, first of all. And that someone or something that I call a higher power, the evidence of that higher power is what the group looks like from the outside. For example, if I were going to my Monday night meeting and I was a stranger to that meeting, standing outside the door and watching people go out the door after that meeting, would I see unity of purpose? Would I see that look on their faces like, I got something from that meeting? And if I didn't, I probably wouldn't come through the door, and I would consider maybe that the group isn't listening to its higher power. So the way the higher power for me expresses itself to the group is based on what I see the decisions that the group makes. A loving God. Every OA group has one. I have one myself. That means every person in that group has one too, and the group has one. And how that higher power is expressed in our group conscience means the decisions that we make are evidence of how much recovery the group has. Not just me personally, but how much recovery there is in the group. And that's a different kind of concept than looking at, well, is the higher power working just for me? No, the higher power isn't just working for me, although I have one. It's really about how does that higher power get infused into the group? How does that enthusiasm for the decision get infused into the group? And what's the evidence of that? And then our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. That's a good one. There's a reason why we call OA a fellowship, not an organization, because OA is a service structure. We don't have a power structure. So there's no chairman of the board. There's no secretary of state. There's no treasurer that, you know, is in charge over a bunch of people who do his bidding. There's none of that. We are here to serve. And so if I'm a trusted servant, my only purpose is to serve. It doesn't matter what my title is. It doesn't matter, you know, how much authority I've got. I am here to serve. In OA, we talk about the inverted triangle. So if you can imagine an inverted triangle where the point is on the bottom and the long part is at the top. The bottom is the servant. The bottom is the chairman. The bottom is the trusted servant that we talk about in OA. And we are up here, and the servant is serving the people up here. So the inverted triangle is actually very important to OA because it embodies the concept of service. So when I start thinking about, well, all the years I've been in OA, and what kind of things have I seen where tradition two has actually worked in the group, here's some of the stuff I came up with. And Barbara had some of the same stuff. So this is really interesting because we are both long-timers, and we've seen some of the stuff that has come up. So, giving out chips or not giving out chips at the meeting, chips for abstinence or chips for recovery, food plans, gray sheet, purple sheet, orange sheet, or yellow sheet. They've all been out there. We've all seen that. You know, I mean, well, some of us have seen that. But we know they're out there. And they are still out there, by the way. People still use them. Recipe books on the table with OA literature, displayed on the table with OA literature. Just think about that. abstinence requirements for service positions. Big controversy for a long time. And still not, you know, there's still controversy around it. And I wouldn't even say controversy. I'd talk about it more as thoughtful discussion, because it's come down to that now. It's come down to, do we need to have abstinence requirements? And what purpose will they serve, and how will they serve the group? What to do about speakers who are not abstinent? I can assure you, I'm abstinent today. And just in case you're wondering. Should there be sponsorship requirements? Should sponsors be at goal weight? And what is goal weight, by the way? I mean, how do we define that, and how do we know whether that speaker is at goal weight? Can you speak if you haven't worked the steps? These are all controversies that I have experienced in my years in recovery. Taking pictures of OA members during an OA meeting with and without their consent. This is still going on. I know of a meeting where this happened. Shocking, isn't it? Shocking. Aside from the fact that it breaks tradition, breaks anonymity, but how does the group deal with that kind of stuff? How do you apply tradition to that kind of stuff when it happens? Is it okay to bring food and eat it during an OA meeting? I love the idea that we have a lunch table back there. And some meetings allow food and some meetings don't. Again, the group conscience, the higher power is working through the group to help them make the best decision for that group. What to do about money missing from the treasury? This happened in a couple groups that I know of. And then how do we deal with the member who stole the money? Because sometimes we know who it is. Sometimes we know what happened. And then particularly one that many of us in this room, especially if you've been here for a while, have dealt with, is defending the lawsuit that was brought against the Sacramento Valley Intergroup. If our group had not had a group, had a higher power working through us to inform our group and work through us in a spiritual way, I don't think the Sacramento Valley Intergroup would have survived. And it took place over a number of years, so it wasn't just a one and done kind of situation. So for me, the focus of Tradition 2 is on two things, OA unity and mutual support. And both of these mean that if we have those, the group will survive. The group will thrive, actually, not just survive. And Tradition Tool is like a personal, you know, one of the other tools that we use. Tradition 2 is the tool that allows OA to survive. It allows the groups to survive. And if we use it that way, then the group will be okay. It will be healthy. It will attract new members. It will make decisions that serve the group rather than serving individual members. So how do I apply Tradition 2 to myself in all my affairs? You know, traditions aren't just for, they aren't just something on paper that I read occasionally and, you know, I go to meetings and I study them that way. They aren't about that. I apply the steps and traditions to all my affairs. I spend much more time outside the rooms of OA than I do inside the rooms of OA. And so there is a part of me that wants to fight. There's a part of me that wants to be right. There's a part of me that wants my vote to be the one vote that counts. There is a part of me that wants to mow people down. And when I get into a meeting and I'm behaving that way, I pull out all my weapons. I pull out my mouth. I pull out my anger. I pull out my bitterness. I pull out my superiority. I mean, I act like I know it all. And I don't act like I know it all because I've been here a long time. I just know it all because I'm superior to you. And I will fight to the death in order to win that battle. You know, there's a part of me that wants that. There is a part of me that is there. And so because of Tradition 2, I'm being asked to give up that self-will. My higher power is saying, stop the fighting. Stop the battle. It isn't winnable that way. And when I give up my will, what it implies is that I'm trusting the group's higher power to take care of the decision of the group. I'm giving up my will so that the higher power of the group can take over. And so I'm really letting go of my own self-will so that the group can survive. Not so I can survive, but the group can survive. And that's a very different concept. When I get into a business meeting, when I go in with that frame of mind that I need the group to survive because I need that group for my recovery, then that puts me in a different frame of mind. And what I realize when I'm in the middle of one of those battles is that I'm fighting the wrong battle and I'm fighting with the wrong people. The battle is inside me. It's a battle of my self-will, my head versus my heart. But it's not about them, but what I also realize is when I get up there and I have a lot to say about something that nobody cares about and I want my way, I'm really displaying my own character defects for all the world to see, and they're on full display and everybody can see them. It's like I might as well have worn a sign that said, I'm in the middle of a lot of self-will right now and have at me. So for me, the level of a group's health is really about how united they are. How attractive they are to the newcomers who are coming through the door. How they bring people back into the rooms and make it a safe place for them to be while they're striving to have that, to get into that first day of abstinence. You know, many of us here in the Sacramento Valley have been blessed with a lot of days of abstinence for counting days. We are very lucky here that we have a lot of strong recovery in our group. But there are other groups that are really struggling. I mean, when we talk about somebody, a group that's taking pictures at an OA meeting, you know, that's a measure of what the group is like. And do I want that level of recovery? I ask myself, do I want that level of recovery? No, I probably don't. So I'm happy and grateful that I have many opportunities here in Sacramento to participate in the meetings, to go to business meetings, have my voice heard, and to have the group make an informed decision about a particular issue, and then all of us walk out arm in arm together because we have agreed that that is the group's decision and we know it's going to support the group unity. So there's one thing about this tradition that is difficult. It was difficult for me to understand when I first got to OA, but it's gotten easier. Just because support does not imply agreement. Because something is supported by the group conscience, and by that I mean an informed group conscience where the minority opinions have been heard, where people have been listened to respectfully and calmly, where the meeting is a safe place where people can talk about their differences and then take a vote on it. That's a safe place to be. That's a place where tradition too is alive and well. But there's something inside me that still says, well, how do I do that? I'm still left with this issue because while I support the group and I'm glad the group, and I will vote with the group because I want that group to thrive and survive, there's still a part of me that is having trouble with that particular issue. And so how do I resolve that inside myself? And that's something that working the steps will help me do, talking it over with a sponsor, going to many meetings, listening, and also the other thing is watching once the group makes the decision, how does it roll out after the decision is made? Like, for example, food plans, I guess, would be an example. Once the group has made a decision that they're going to follow Gray Sheet or whatever they're doing, and it's just an example, then I watch and see, so is the Gray Sheet working for people that use it? Is it helpful to them? Maybe it's something I need to take a look at. Maybe I should be following Gray Sheet. Maybe there's another food plan I should be following. Maybe I need to look at what is preventing me from adjusting my food plan. It's the after effect of the group decision that I start watching. And if there's something I need to change, then I need to change it. Because obviously the group decision made a decision and it's working for them. Thank you, Scott. So what I've learned about tradition too is that it's really an action step. It's really asking me to take action. And I'm talking about taking action in a really forceful way. It's asking me to give up my self-will, even and especially when I don't want to give up my self-will, like I'm hanging on tight. I'm asked to disagree without being disagreeable. I'm asked to be okay with raising my hand and having a different opinion than the rest of the group and be brave enough to say that opinion. I'm also asked to listen carefully to others, especially the minority opinions. Many times, decisions have changed based on somebody who came out of the blue and offered something that the group disagreed with. It means that I listen to everyone, that I don't exclude anyone because I may or may not like them. And it also requires a lot of patience and good listening skills. I heard someone say today that silence in the group is a useful thing, and I have learned that myself. It's okay to not be talking all the time. It's okay to have a period of silence in the room while the group is considering and pondering what to do about a particular issue. And then finally, when the vote comes up, I'm being asked to vote what's best for the group. Not best for Rosalie, not because I like my friend over here and she's the one that raised the issue and I like her position. No. What is best for the group? What is going to help the group survive? And then finally, if the vote doesn't go the way I voted, then I'm also asked to be gracious when the vote has been taken and it clearly wasn't the way I voted against it or whatever it was. What am I asked to do? I'm asked to go up to that person, and I learned how to do this actually when I saw somebody else do it early in my recovery. Again, two people fighting in a meeting, disagreeing, and the vote was taken, and then the person who won the vote went up and talked to the other person who lost the vote and put her arms around him and said, I'm so sorry that the group didn't go your way, and we are still friends. It's a theme that I've heard in the other speakers today, that you walk out because you understand that it's about the unity of the group. It is not about my individual person and my individual wishes. And then the other thing to consider about tradition, too, is what to do when mistakes are made. Because sometimes the votes, we all know, we've been here, sometimes the group makes an uninformed decision. Maybe they don't have all the facts, or they voted too soon before all voices were heard. What happens then? We know in a way that we're allowed to make mistakes. Thank God for that. And we also know that because of that higher power in the group, working through the group, we know that the group is going to come back. The group is going to look at it. They'll thoughtfully consider it again. And at some point, the issue may come up, or it may even go away. I've seen that happen in groups where the issue just disappears. It doesn't, you know, it really becomes irrelevant at some point. But if the mistake has been made, the group will come back together again if it's a strong group, and they will reconsider the issue. And I think of it as having, you know, the higher power in a group, there aren't any mistakes. There are just learning opportunities, and we get to reconsider what we did before, just like when we individually consider our food plans. I know the food plan I had when I started in OA those many years ago is not the same food plan I follow today. I was allowed to make mistakes and change my food plan, move on. And that's the way the group operates, too. The thing I've learned about making mistakes in the group is that sometimes it takes a long time for the groups to identify that they've made a mistake and then to bring it back to the table and reconsider it. So I just want to work through, Scott, how much time do I have? 5 minutes, maybe? Okay, 5 minutes. I want to work through this thing about chips because I remember the controversy with chips. It was very controversial here in Sacramento. And I, as an individual member of OA, I had to work through my own issues around the chips. And we're not talking potato chips here, right? We're talking chips for recovery, chips for abstinence. It doesn't matter. It was the controversy around having chips. And so I don't support chips. Okay, personally, I don't support chips. But I support groups that want to have chips. And every time there is somebody who goes up and takes a chip for, whether it's for recovery or days of abstinence, it doesn't matter to me. I clap right along with the group. I hold that chip when it's passed around, and I offer only the best for that person who got those days of abstinence or days of recovery, whatever they're counting. And I go up after the meeting and give them a big hug for a good job well done. It's really important to me to be able to separate my will, my wishes, from the group's wishes. And really, I found I can hold two thoughts in my head at the same time. I can honor my own need not to have a chip. For me, my personal opinion is that I want to take a 24-hour chip every day because I just have that amount of time. And that's kind of how I resolved it in my head. It's like, back to basics. I only have 24 hours. Okay, if I needed to take a chip or wanted to take a chip, I'd probably take one for 24 hours. But at the same time, I can support the group. I mean, there's no winners or losers here. I'm not in a battle to say your way is right and mine is wrong or vice versa. It isn't about that. Again, it's about that battle. Who's fighting the battle? The battle is in me. It's not in the group. So when I keep it out of the group, then I'm fine. That didn't mean I didn't have to do a lot of work with my sponsor on the chip issue. And I was so glad that at some point it just kind of melded into the background. You know, some meetings have chips now, some meetings don't. And hey, they're surviving. There's a lot of recovery out there in those groups that have chips. And for the people that do service when they give them out, even better, because now we've got a service position out of it. There's one other, so, you know, I carry... What I've learned about the traditions is that they apply to all areas of my life. There isn't just one area where I can say, oh, it only applies to OA. I'm over here and I'm compartmentalizing it. No, it isn't about that. They apply to all areas of my life. And I think particularly about one area where my family is dealing with right now. And it's when I talk about it, I call it, what to do about mom? Because that's how I think of it. My mother-in-law is getting older, and she lives by herself in a house she can't take care of. And so there's been many, many intense family discussions, some with disagreements in them about what to do about mom. And when I think of that, I think this is a place where tradition too applies, because we don't really know what to do about mom. We don't know what's going to happen. We think there's going to be a significant event, and that will make the decision. But in the meantime, she wants to live alone, and she wants us to leave her alone and not get into her business. And so that's the tack the family has taken. We've stepped back. We've talked among ourselves. We've tried to inform ourselves about the options out there for her in case and if it happens. We've offered our support, and we support what her decision is. We may disagree with it, and we do, but we support her decision. And that's kind of how the OA groups act. It's like, I don't have all the information. I don't have to have it all now either. I don't have it about mom. Sometimes I don't have it about OA groups either. It's up to me to get informed about it and to thoughtfully consider the options. But I'm just one member of the group. And if the group doesn't survive, I'm not going to survive either. So that's my take. That's it. Thank you all for being here. I'll go over to Scott.
Thank you very much.
The meeting is now open for personal share.
There you go. Thank you.
My name is Lori, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lori.
My first experience with group conscious.